Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Ho, 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 ho! Merry Christmas!
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the merry voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Merry for obvious reasons.
What a lovely time to be alive.
Always a lovely time to be alive, but even more so, you could argue, at this time of the year.
Any exciting plans for Christmas?
I'll pop back and see my family, my niece, my nephews. I'm excited to see them and to eat, of course. So, yeah, it'll be fun. What about yourself?
Yes, pretty much the same. Yeah, a vegan Christmas for you, I'd imagine.
I do eat fish, so I will have some salmon on Christmas Day, if you're interested.
Will you?
Yeah.
Is that going to be your main choice?
That'll be my main protein. And then, of course, I go the usual trimmings.
What do you do with gravy and stuff then?
There's a vegetarian gravy that I tend to go for. It's kind of an odd subject, bearing in mind this is the Goalkeepers Union podcast to discuss Christmas dinners. But I am actually now intrigued as to what you'll be having.
I'll just be doing the usual turkey, ham with all the trimmings. Mm. Pigs in blankets.
Boring. Is that what you mean?
Classic.
Like dull.
Traditional.
Mediocre. Mundane.
Okay, well look, we're going to move swiftly on. The reason I padded that out is because this is going to be a very quick podcast today.
Yes.
We've got things to do. Of course, it's Christmas. Plenty going on, but a few instances from Sunday that we just cannot ignore.
Mm.
And one of those being David De Gea in the game at Vicarage Road between Watford and Manchester United. Watford, their first Premier League home win of the season under their new boss, Nigel Pearson, and De Gea pretty much handed it to them.
A game that I was at, as it turns out. So I did go and watch my old boys and delighted for them, but it was bizarre. Now, I must be honest, I actually popped down at half-time to get a beverage. Quite long queues at Vicarage Road.
Mm.
It's a different subject, but I think they do need to sort that out because it took me a long time to get served. Anyway, as I was getting served, thankfully there were screens where we were, so I was watching the game. But what ended up happening was we heard the roar. Because the screens are slightly behind what was going on the field of play, the screens that I was watching must have been about 10 seconds behind. So we heard the roar, so we knew Watford had scored. Then I'm watching the screen to see the goal, and for the life of me, I could not believe what I saw. Obviously, ball whipped into the box. The volley, such a tame volley, and to see it go in the way it did, I had to stay down there and watch four or five replays because it was great. They showed four or five replays there and then. And even now, and I know normally we look to critique and we look to see what could have gone wrong, it's one of those mistakes I cannot explain because it's almost like his hand-eye coordination has let him down. Now, the only explanation I can give, and I think this is the one they went with, was the fact that he might have been thinking about what he was about to do next.
Mm.
The only other explanation I can give was that he got fouled in the first half on a cross. Cross whipped on him. Again, wasn't particularly strong. I know we've touched on this a couple of times with David De Gea recently. He was given the foul this time, but they scored the goal. I wondered whether that might have impacted him. I wondered whether he was then looking at the next thing he was about to do. But the actual mistake itself, you watch it again and again, effectively, his hands are just in the wrong place. It's as simple as that. And we're not talking millimetres, we're not talking centimetres. It's a couple of inches off, and it's so bad. It's the kind of mistake that if a 12-year-old makes it in a game, on a Sunday league game, the 12-year-old is down on his knees, head in hands, really disappointed with himself. And look, David De Gea, he's had an upturn in fortunes this year. He's been a lot better this season than he was back end of last season. But this, for the life of me, I cannot critique it because I can't explain it. It's just one of those things.
Yeah, it wasn't even head in hands. He was just head in grass afterwards because he was devastated.
And it was interesting for the next 10-15 minutes, and I watched him intently for the next 10-15 minutes. And of course, they scored the second soon after. Nothing he could have done about that. It was a penalty, of course, but you could see that it impacted him. And not a lot impacts David De Gea, I must say that, but rightly so this did, because it was one of those moments where he must have got back after the game, and obviously long drive back up to Manchester, I'm sure on the team coach, well, he must be asking so many questions of himself. Such a tame shot, something that he'll deal with 1,000 times every day in training, and never has it ever caused a problem to slip through him in the way it did. I do wonder now how he bounces back. And obviously, there's going to be a big spotlight on him again now over the next few weeks, as is the way with goalkeeping. You make an error, and of course, the game soon after, people do have a big spotlight on you. So he does need to bounce back pretty quickly. From his point of view, you hope he now has 4 or 5 solid games in a row and this gets forgotten. But it was one of those mistakes that I can't necessarily critique, because it was so unusual and it was so uncharacteristic, and it's not like it was a technical flaw. It was just as simple as his hand-eye coordination was off.
A first on the Goalkeepers Union podcast. You cannot critique an error. You can't even give it an error rating, mate.
Well, it would be a 10. That's the problem. It would be a comfortable 10 out of 10 in terms of error rating, because the ball was so slow and it was just such a simple technique. The only thing, I say it again, the only thing I can think of is he's already got his mind on what he's about to do next and he's taken his focus off the ball, hence why he's missed it effectively.
We had a whole load of responses in to Twitter and people tweeting us about the incident itself, and there were some suggestions, and everybody followed your path pretty much. He was thinking about what he was going to do. You always say it's the easy ones that you seem to let in. We look at Dean Henderson earlier on this season against Liverpool with Genie Wijnaldum when the ball slipped through his fingers, Taibbi style. But some people suggested maybe the post, maybe he was impacted by the fact that he was so close to the post, maybe the spin on the ball. But we are clutching at straws, aren't we?
Ultimately, it's the loss of concentration. Now, whatever's caused that, only David De Gea will know. David De Gea might not even know. This is why we're now trying to come up with a conclusion. Look, ordinarily, I look at it and say, oh, do you know, it was a set position. He was too low, or he was too wide with his feet, or he was too advanced, he was too deep, or he's no, nothing to do with technique. That's the problem. So it's just purely a loss of concentration, which might be, I am focused on what I'm doing next. I am focused on, or the post. You know, it's that one, you know, you're driving and suddenly you see something in your periphery and you just lose focus for a split second and you hear the car wobble, or you see the car wobble. You know, it's that kind of one where it could have been the post. It could have been a fan shouting something. It could have been thinking about the next. There's 1,000 things it could have been, but it was as simple as that. He's lost concentration for a split second, and in the end, it is a really poor error.
Just very quickly to finish on this one. By the way, the first one in the first half, I didn't think that was a foul when he was challenged, similar to the way he was challenged against Everton, but actually not as bad. I don't think it was a foul. So perhaps that was in his mind. The other thing was the penalty. You saying that he couldn't do anything about it.
Well,
so we've talked about De Gea with penalties before. Now, Troy Deeney has had penalties in 4 of the last 5 seasons against United. The first 2 pretty much went straight down the middle-ish. The most recent one before this Sunday, he actually put to De Gea's right, which is where De Gea dived this time. And I felt a bit bad because on radio I was hammering De Gea, saying everybody knew Deeney, especially for the fact that he's been out as well, not particularly still 100% match fit. You thought he's just going to rifle this down the middle. He did exactly that. And if we go even further, since saving a penalty from Leighton Baines in October 2014, it's been 15 penalties from De Gea, hasn't saved a single one. He saved 2 out of 25 during his time in the Premier League,
which isn't great, you know. And look, I think obviously someone who's I think I saved 19 out of 53 or whatever it was. So yes, of course, you know, I just dropped that one in there. No, look, it's not great. It's not. And I think what I would say again, this is where I think then the mistake may well have impacted his decision. Imagine that you've just made this dreadful error. Soon after they've got a penalty, his mind scrambled. Now, in that moment, do you then have the clarity of thought to then decide, right, Troy Deeney, okay, he's put a couple here, a couple there. He normally goes down the middle. He's lacking confidence, maybe lacking fitness. So da-da-da. Do you have the clarity of thought in that split second to think of all that stuff? Or are you still thinking, oh my God, I've just made a mistake. They've now got a chance of making it 2-0. What does he do? What does he do? Do you know what? The last one he did to my right. Okay, I'm going to go to my right. It could be as simple as that, and that's why I think that first mistake that impacts that. You know, how often have we all experienced this in goal where you are absolutely buzzing and a penalty against you and you just know you're going to save it? You know, when you're at that level of confidence, I had this a few times, very rarely, but a few times when I'm literally talking to the striker and telling them, I know I'm going to save this, and I've told them that, and I do go and save it because your confidence is that high. Similarly, when your confidence is low, it feels like you could dive the right way, the ball's there, and it still goes through you. So I do think that first mistake has then impacted the penalty. Now, I say he's got no chance because it's a penalty. And I think we've got to be careful to then start to blame goalkeepers for penalties. The bit you might blame or ask questions is the decision to dive, because that might not necessarily be David De Gea. That might be the goalkeeper coach. It might be the staff. Because beforehand, I was always told, certainly the last few years, I was always told when it came to penalties, pretty much what to do. which was a great help because we would study the previous four or five and we would make the decision before the game as to what I would do if I was facing a penalty. I would suggest that if United aren't doing that, they really should, because there is a good chance you're going to face a penalty in a lot of games now, especially given VAR and everything else. There's going to be more penalties than ever. So I think for goalkeepers, if you're going into a game and you've got that kind of data, you've got that kind of footage to be able to look at, 100% you should do it. 100% you should know beforehand what you're going to do for a penalty before the game's even started.
Wow. What if when the penalty taker is approaching and suddenly you think his body shape is winding up to go in the opposite direction to the way that I've been told I should dive? Do you still just go the same way?
Personally, I think if you've got enough footage and you've got enough data, now, unless they go and do something completely different, let's say that normally they have a really shallow angle of run-up and suddenly they then go straight on. Now, that might be a variable that you say, actually, okay, they've now changed what they're doing. But if you've got some decent data behind you and you know that 80% of the time they're going to go down to your bottom right-hand corner, I would suggest go with the percentages, especially if they've scored. If they've scored their last penalty or last two penalties doing something and it's their chosen side, why would you risk it? Why would you? Sometimes I get it, go with your gut. But there's nothing more frustrating than you've been told to go to your right hand side. That's what they always do. And then in the heat of the moment, you're like, nah, I think they're going to go to my left. And they don't. They do exactly what they've done every single time. There's nothing more frustrating. Now, look, people are going to disagree with this. And by all means, I'd love to hear your opinions on this. Mine is that beforehand, if you've got an idea, plus the confidence, if you feel, I know where you're going. I did it against Charlton. I saved three in a row. I knew where all three were going in that game. Johnny Jackson, I knew he was going straight down the middle. I knew the next two were going down to my right. I was so confident because I'd already decided before the game that I was going to do that. And I saved all three. And I've got no doubt the extra adrenaline that I had getting down to my right. And those that have seen the saves, you'll see it is right in the bottom corner, but I got such power away because I was so convinced they were going there. I then made the save. So look, it was my strategy. It worked for me. It might not necessarily work for everybody, and everybody can do whatever they want. But personally, I think you make the decision before the game. You put in the homework, you do the hard work, you do it with your goalkeeper coach, you make your decision, and you stick with it.
Moving on to the game at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which, Richard, incidentally, was the first time that a Premier League team has beaten a fellow Premier League team on three different home grounds.
Well, there you go.
White Hart Lane, Wembley and the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
What a stat that is. Well done, Stato.
Thank you. Well, this one in particular is, again, we don't condone violence here. We spoke about the incident with Alexander Nubel a couple of weeks back. By the way, he's going to be the heir to Manuel Neuer's throne at Bayern Munich. He's agreed a deal to move there, so that's an interesting one. They almost look exactly the same, by the way. It looks just like a brand new Manuel Neuer. But Paulo Gazzaniga on Marcos Alonso. Now, yes, like I said, we don't condone violence here, but I think this is hilarious. The more I watch it, the funnier it gets.
Okay. Yeah, it is. And I don't want to touch on that too much. This frustrated me, I'll be honest. And look, again, you guys know I back up goalkeepers, back goalkeepers to the hilt. And there's a lot of good performances I'd love to touch on as well. And it frustrates me in a way that we're touching on two not so good ones with David De Gea. This one, for me, is as bad as David De Gea, if not worse. And the reason being, the more I've watched it, I cannot for the life of me understand why he hasn't gone with his hands. Now, this applies to all goalkeepers, by the way, and this will be probably my big takeaway from this particular podcast, is if you can go with your hands, you've got to go with your hands. Now, look, you might get the odd injury, and this is coming from someone who has stud marks all over his body, a broken cheek and a broken eye, because of the fact that I was quite brave and I would dive in at feet. But ultimately, if the ball's there, I hate it when I see goalkeepers then dive in with their feet and try and tackle the player effectively rather than just going in with your hands, gripping it with two hands and killing the play dead. For me, it's a little bit cowardly. And when I saw this, I can't help but feel that he's been a little bit cowardly because he can get there with his hands and he's decided to do some kind of kung fu style something. And in the end, he got exactly what he deserved. Well, actually, he didn't, because he deserved a red card as well.
Yeah, didn't get the red, did he?
No.
And what I found, and again, yes, listen, in terms of goalkeeping, it's not funny, but it was when Marcos Alonso was down, they all looked at the referees as if to say, what have you given here, ref? It was almost like Gazzaniga wanted to turn to the ref and say, you might want to have another look at that, ref. Probably want to give a penalty.
For the life of me, when I saw it, and I was laughing at that point, when the referee's given him the foul, we all knew instantly it was going to be overturned. It was just, the whole thing was bizarre. And it was then one of the Spurs
Serge Aurier,
players.
Yeah. As he was sort of standing over Marcos Alonso. There was another player there as well, I can't remember. But Serge Aurier was standing over Marcos Alonso and almost looked towards Gazzaniga to say, mate, what on earth are you doing?
It was one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. But this is one that I can critique. And again, a big learning lesson for anyone listening in. And I go back to that. Very simple. If you can go with your hands, you go with your hands. This is a ball that's coming through. He had every chance to go directly to the ball, grab it with the hand, probably go down in the process. He might get clattered in the process, but you kill the play dead. Again, I've seen it over and over and over. And I appreciate that you make a decision as the ball's coming through. And he will have made his decision quite early. But it was simple. It was the wrong decision. In the end, I go back to that where I think it just looks a bit cowardly. And I hate saying it because I love, you know, back up goalkeepers. I back goalkeepers to the hilt. And I can more often than not understand a mistake. This one frustrates me because I think he's made the mistake for the wrong reasons. Now, I don't mind it if it's you know, the amount of times we've talked about a shot that might have moved on you, or it might have dipped just in front of you, or you know, you've made a wrong decision to come or stay, or you come for a cross and misjudged it. I don't mind with any of that because a lot of that's technical and it's not something that involves your mentality, your attitude. But for this, for me, I just think that he's made the decision based on the fact that he's lacked a bit of bravery in that moment. Now, I'm not saying he's not a brave goalkeeper because I believe he is, but in that particular moment, that specific moment, I think he's lacked a little bit of bravery.
Just to finish on this, there isn't an argument here to suggest that he was almost caught in two minds. When I first saw it, I thought he's done the classic. He's gone to get the ball and clean up the player at the same time. And he's got three quarters of the way through it and thought, oh crikey, I can only do one. And he's chosen the latter to clean up the player and he's just forgotten about the ball.
So this is the only backup I can give him. And if it's not a bravery issue, then it's because he's made his decision too early and he's committed to it. You know, it's the cliche. If you're going to come, come all the way. When I... Sometimes you can change your mind. I've made mistakes changing my mind, by the way, so don't get me wrong. But sometimes you can come, and if you realise the wrong decision, don't come all the way, is my advice. Because I think that there are times, we've all had it, where you start to come for a cross and you realise you're not getting there. Well, you might actually better off just setting where you are and trying to make the save. Now, they might score a simple goal, but actually they were going to score anyway if you came and got nowhere near it. This is another one where I think if he's made the decision that early, it is the wrong decision. I think he had plenty of time to change that decision and go with his hands. And in the end, it doesn't look good. And as you say, it looks quite humorous, if anything. And actually very lucky not to get a red.
Yeah. And listen, like you said, this is the Goalkeepers Union podcast. We do want to celebrate goalkeeping this weekend. A bit difficult to do that in the top flight. Yeah. But Gazzaniga made an error against United as well from the Marcus Rashford goal. But all in all, since he's come in, he's been pretty decent.
Very good. And I think actually it'll be interesting when Hugo Lloris is fit, which doesn't sound like it's going to be any time soon by all accounts. But when he is fit, they've got decisions to make because I think that Gazzaniga's done enough, I would say, to give him a serious challenge. And don't forget, this is a World Cup winning goalkeeper. But Hugo Lloris had a bit of a tough time before he got the injury. So I think that'll be a really interesting decision when Hugo Lloris is fit as to whether he sticks with Gazzaniga, which if he does, I think that'll mean that Hugo Lloris moves on, or whether Jose Mourinho decides to put Hugo Lloris back in the net.
We're going to finish on a positive. And there were plenty of decent saves throughout all four tiers of English football this weekend. Your pick of the bunch?
Well, I was at a game myself. Went to QPR Charlton, at Loftus Road. And interesting watching both goalkeepers because I haven't seen, certainly Joe Lumley for a little while. I know he's been in and out of the QPR team. Got a little bit of criticism this season, but really impressed with Joe Lumley at the weekend. Probably won't get a chance to see this, or people won't get a chance to see this, but distribution in particular, he's got this drive where, you know, we talk about being head height the whole way. It was actually like knee height the whole way. There was one in particular where he plays out from time to time, plays into midfield, plays to fullbacks. But every now and then, because he's got a certain type of physique where he's got really long levers, so he's got that technique where he can strike at 70, 80 yards if he needs to. And there was once in particular, and I'd love to get the footage of this if we can, where he struck it basically over the top, but it was drilled. It was about 2 yards off the deck the whole way. And I can't remember who the striker was, but they should have done better, really. Should have controlled it and they would have been one-on-one. But it was just really nice to see that he has the ability to go short. He can clip to fullbacks, wingers, but to then go over the top every now and then. It's something that goalkeepers shouldn't forget about. As much as we're taught to play out now and we want to try and keep possession, to have the ability to go in behind every now and then, it just keeps the opposition guessing. It can move them back and it can make it easier to play. And I thought Joe did that really well at the weekend. Dylan, and I watch Dylan Phillips a lot. I'm actually going to watch him again on Boxing Day in their game against Bristol City, of course, a club that I'm involved with. Dylan Phillips was excellent for Charlton, made probably one of the best one-on-one saves I've ever seen for the fact that his positioning was spot on. It was one of these blatant one-on-ones where the striker's away, no one within 30 yards of him, one-on-one. He could have actually waited because he had teammates coming as well. He could have squared it and they'd have scored. But Dylan just held. The moment he then committed and he knew that they were going to shoot, so he didn't come too far out. In fact, it's a good coaching point. You see often with one-on-ones that goalkeepers will be like 15 yards out. The problem with that, there's too much space behind you. It's easy to go round you and score. So Dylan's held at about the six, and he's waited, and he's waited, and he's waited. That's meant that the attackers then had to shoot at some point because there's not enough space to go round you. The moment the attacker then put his head down to shoot, Dylan, in the space of a split second, covered about 4 or 5 yards and did the most fantastic spread. And I think it must have hit his toe and gone up over the bar. And you could just see how pumped up he was when he made the save because he had nailed it. He'd executed the technique absolutely perfectly. I think he then squared up to the attacker. I don't know why he did that.
He did. But... well, it was Naki Wells who was put through, and he had an eternity. Poor from Wells, to be fair, because he was sort of looking around. He should have just been focused. He took way too long. And yeah, Phillips made the save and then almost kind of puffed his chest out and almost went to go at Naki. I don't know for what reason.
Do you know what? I'll tell you, the only way I can describe this is he plays with aggression. And I don't mind this because if you have that mentality, this gladiatorial mentality that you're there, you're in the Coliseum, it's you against them, you know, and it means that much to you. And when I watch Dylan, I think he's got that going on. I think it means that much to him. He's got real aggression when he plays and he wants to win. He's desperate to win and he sees you trying to score past me. That idea of you will not score past me. Don't you even try. And then that's where the aggression comes and sometimes spills over a little bit. But no, I was delighted for him. Made several other brilliant saves. The fact they got the equaliser in the end arguably won him a point. I just wanted to touch on Ben Foster as well because I was at that game as well. And excellent. I love watching Ben. I mean, he's got everything for me. And even now at the age he is, he's getting some great publicity at the moment as well. I mean, he does some amazing things off the field. For me, he is just... even at this age, he's playing the best football I believe he's ever played. He's still as powerful as he's ever been. And watching him against Man United, against his old club, of course, as well, that would have been really satisfying for him. So, no, delighted to see him do well. There were lots of other positive performances this weekend as well. Plenty of clean sheets. Dean Henderson with another clean sheet. Look, some really good stuff going on in the goalkeeping world. I hate that we focus largely on Gazzaniga and De Gea, but they were the two standout moments, two crazy moments to a large extent. But it's great to see so much else going on in the world of goalkeeping that's so positive.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, mate, you better rush off and get your salmon cooking.
Indeed, that is the plan.
Gravy on salmon. Who would have thought it? This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, for another week in association with GK Icon, Goalkeepers 365 and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you very soon.